Dr. Craig, we got a lot to get to today, but before we do, we have a special guest in the studio, and I'm talking the president of Reasonable Faith, and I want you to take the privilege of introducing him.
It is a privilege, Kevin. Dr. John Herring is the president and executive director of Reasonable Faith, and it has been such a pleasure to work with John. He is very capable. He is a man of vision, great organizational ability, and real passion for the ministry. And John is also the teaching pastor and minister to adults at Johnson Ferry Baptist Church in Atlanta, where Jan and I attend. So he carries or wears a number of hats, both with Reasonable Faith and in his role as a pastor. So it's been just a joy to work with John in developing Reasonable Faith as a ministry.
Dr. Herring, you jumped in with both feet. You really did. What are some of the things that you've seen happen with Reasonable Faith since you've taken over?
Well, my association with Dr. Craig began as a college pastor when I was serving in a local church, and I was on the front lines of trying to do ministry in a situation where students were trying to defend their faith, and I was trying to equip them to defend their faith, and failing quite miserably. And that's how I began to discover some of Dr. Craig's materials and became a real fan of Dr. Craig. And then I was fortunate to move from Texas, where I was living, to Atlanta. And when I saw this church that I was thinking about going to be on staff with, I saw that Dr. Craig taught Sunday school at the church. And I was to be over the Sunday school ministry as one of my responsibilities. I could not believe it.
Wow.
And I thought, what a great endorsement of the church, and what a great opportunity to get to know Dr. Craig personally. And so I was very happy to move to Atlanta, and we began working with Dr. Craig first as just as a pastor to one of our leaders there. The first year I was at the church in Atlanta, we hosted a wonderful apologetics conference, and it was just a thrill for me to meet, not only to work with Dr. Craig, but to meet some of these great giants of the intellectual and philosophical world, a Christian worldview. Really phenomenal. From there, we began to develop a real heart for getting Bill's material and his message out to a wider audience. And there were a number of lay people at Johnson Ferry, people that are a part of Bill's, really, Sunday school class, his Defenders class, who began to have a dream, a vision of putting together a nonprofit organization to help get Bill's material out into the public domain. And actually, Kevin is really quite responsible for this, because it was really you, Kevin, that had the idea to do some sort of radio show. And I think it was even you who suggested the title of the show, Reasonable Faith. And here we are 4 or 5 years later now, not necessarily radio, but through the miracle of the internet, now reaching tens of thousands of people every week with the Reasonable Faith podcast, with the Defenders class, with Dr. Craig's audio blog, and all the other resources we have on the website. It's been a ride.
You know, John, I noticed the same thing that you did, and that is that the lay people outside of the universities and academia were beginning to discover Dr. Craig. And I said, we really need to facilitate this and keep this going. This is something very interesting that God is doing. And I don't even think Bill knew that people outside of academia were actually discovering him and discovering who he was and really needing and wanting his resources. Now, Reasonable Faith chapters are starting to spring up. That's something new as well. Talk a little bit about that.
We could be any more excited about that, because it's a physical and local expression of the content that we're putting out on the website. And so you have guys like Chris Shannon in our Dallas chapter, who has a passion for apologetics, who is very well versed in apologetics, and who wants to see a movement toward rational Christian thought in his local area happen. And what he's discovering is, and others are discovering in their areas, that they may feel like they're on an island of sorts, that they're the only ones that really are interested in this area, but through technology, through networking, through Facebook, and through the Reasonable Faith website, they realize that no, there's other people who want to gather, who want to talk, and want to use these meetings to train themselves, to get equipped, and also to minister to people in their area who have objections to Christianity. So what we see chapters doing is really taking the content from the website and putting the rubber on the road in individual places and cities. We are very excited about this. In fact, when we first put the word out through our mailing list, our email list, about the opportunity to hold a chapter or to form a chapter, we were overwhelmed with the response from all over the world. I mean, it really just was amazing. Now, it's not an easy thing to start a chapter. There's a process, mm-hmm. and you can find out about all of that on our website.
Go to reasonablefaith.org, reasonablefaith.org. Find out how to set up a chapter in your area.
Right, but we are very excited about the future of chapters expressing the heart of reasonable faith.
One of the things that we've done with the Reasonable Faith that is very cutting edge is that rather than do traditional broadcasts, we've done podcasts because we're ahead of the curve here. That's where broadcast is going. It's going online, and but there's always the possibility that we could expand into broadcast and onto radio that would point people to the podcast and point people to the website. So that brings up an issue, one of our favorite topics. Talk a little bit about giving to Reasonable Faith.
Kevin, we are so excited about what God has done through this ministry on literally a shoestring budget. I don't know if people understand this, but maybe this podcast will help them understand the structure of the organization Reasonable Faith. It is a 501c3 nonprofit organization recognized by the IRS. And so people that choose to give to the ministry, either through our website or through the P.O. box, they receive a receipt just like you would from a church or from a charitable organization. You get a tax deduction from that. And we are very excited about that. But Kevin, we have operated this ministry really for the last 4 years on a literal shoestring. We have some wonderful donors, many of them in the Atlanta area. We've got a good base in Southern California and here in Texas. But people are giving to Reasonable Faith now that we have our website from all over the world. One of the things that I do in my role as the president of the board of directors is to try to help support the ministry financially. We have a great base of donors who some of them are able to give large gifts, and we really appreciate that. We really try to operate the budget for Reasonable Faith as prudently as we possibly can. But the thing that really excites me, Kevin, is that the majority of our gifts come from people that are giving just $10 and $20 a month. They go to the Reasonable Faith website, they sign up to be a recurring giver, and it does it automatically. It's all safe and secure. They sign up for $10 or $20 or $50 a month. And these are the donors that are really helping Reasonable Faith share the gospel around the world and supporting the ministry. So we really want to encourage people, if they use the website, if they've been blessed by what Bill is doing and by the content there on the site, we really encourage them to pray about partnering with us to support the ministry of Reasonable Faith, even at a small level. A college student or a young family, $10 or $20 a month would be absolutely wonderful. There are many others who could give much larger gifts, and we certainly need those as well, as we really have big dreams and plans and visions for the future of the ministry. So there's mechanisms for doing that on the website. They can click on their profile, they can click the donate button, and they can sign up to be that recurring giver, or they can give a check through our P.O. box, which is also listed on the website. Supporting the ministry with sustaining gifts, some of them on a monthly basis, $10, $20, $50, $100. Some are able to give larger gifts. We've had some donors give some very significant gifts. But just so that people know, our annual budget for 2010, our proposed budget, somewhere around $130,000. And that's reaching tens of thousands of people across the world every week with wonderful content. And we had a donor we met in the Dallas area who looked at our budget, Kevin, last year, and was shocked and said, "I can't believe that this ministry is doing so much with so little." And what we're excited about for the future is really expanding what we do in Reasonable Faith. We have dreams. We have vision. We would love to expand the offerings on the website in multiple languages. We have people that visit our website from over 120 countries around the world. But right now, there's very little on the website in languages other than English. We'd love to translate the website into Chinese and into German and into Russian and whatever else we could come up with there. So we are very excited about the possibilities of doing that. But Kevin, it takes money to do that.
Let me tell you something interesting is that I've actually talked to people who are atheists who have given to this because they appreciate the content. They're interested in the philosophy and theology that Dr. Craig brings and that Reasonable Faith brings. And so they say, "Well, you know what? This is free to me and I'd like to donate." I've got emails right here in my lap from former atheists who are really studying Dr. Craig's material. I've got an email here from a young Jewish man who is considering Christianity and he has a few questions. He's written to us And so this should really spur us, just these emails alone. This is a worthy ministry and worth giving to.
We couldn't be any more excited about the evangelistic thrust of the ministry. The ministry really functions on different levels, Kevin. We have a strong evangelical ministry, a strong evangelistic presence on the internet where people are literally, Bill, coming to Christ and being encouraged in their faith as they're reading about an intelligent argument for Christianity. We're knocking down those barriers that are keeping people from coming to Christ. People from all over the world, Bill, maybe you could share a story or two about that.
It has been encouraging to get feedback from folks in different countries. Just this week, I read an email that came into the forum about a fellow who said that after years of being an unbeliever, he has come back to faith and has come to Christ again. And it was so encouraging to see people moving in that direction, because you so often hear stories of people moving in the other direction, losing Christian faith. And it's just a thrill to me to think that reasonable faith could be the avenue through which many people would move from unbelief to faith in God. And the most recent question of the week that I have answered is from a person who is moving in that direction and needs some help along the way. So it's been very encouraging to me to see the response from people who are as yet still unbelievers, but appreciate the ministry, appreciate the openness and the honesty with which we address the questions, and who are absorbing this material and many of them making steps toward Christ.
Dr. Herring, I really want to see people sign up for the newsletter as well, and they can do that by going to the website.
They sure can. We would love for people to come to the website and sample the content. Strategically, Kevin, we've offered all of the content on the website for free. You don't have to pay for anything. You don't even have to sign up necessarily to receive content or to read content on the website. But if you do register as a user on reasonablefaith.org, it opens up a little bit more of the website for you to use. And then on your profile, you'll have an opportunity to receive Bill's monthly newsletter, or e-letter, really. It comes to your email box. And Bill does a great job in this monthly newsletter of updating people that are users of the website and where he's been and what he's doing.
You really get behind the scenes. That's what's so good about these newsletters, because you may hear rumors about how a certain debate went or something like that, but you get the straight dope, so to speak. You get the real deal when you get this newsletter.
You do, and Bill tells such great stories, and Bill's had an opportunity to travel even this year to some really wonderful places. And he does a great job in the newsletter of giving us the behind-the-scenes look at his travels there in the United States, but also overseas.
One other thing, Kevin, that we've just initiated for folks who are email subscribers to the Reasonable Faith website is we're starting to send out the question of the week now automatically to folks who want to receive it. So they don't need to come to the website in order to read that week's question. This can be automatically emailed to them. So any folks who are frequenters to the website and would like to get the question of the week automatically sent to them can sign up for that.
Outstanding. Dr. John Herring, great job. Thank you for all that you do. It seems to me that you've kind of indicated just from talking to you where we're going in the future, but any other thoughts on how we want to expand and take a reasonable faith continually around the world?
We would love to. We have big dreams again, Kevin. I mentioned the translation of the site into some of the major languages of the world. That's certainly important. But those of us that work with Dr. Craig, the board of directors, which is 9 people, lay people that have come around Dr. Craig in the ministry, we would love to see Dr. Craig be a voice on a national level here in the United States. And so we would love to be able to provide some resources, particularly with the publicist, to help Dr. Craig get on some of these national shows, these news shows or these news magazines, where frankly, it's a little disappointing sometimes, Kevin, when you see the caliber of guests that some of these folks have. And we believe, at Reasonable Faith, the board of directors, we believe that Dr. Craig is the most credible voice for Christianity and Christian philosophy. Really, we believe in the world, but we think the United States, people in the U.S. really need to hear from Dr. Craig when it comes to important issues in culture. And so we want his name to be on that Rolodex when that producer at the Today Show or Hannity or whatever is looking for a guest, and we need some help with that.
You're not the only one who thinks that about Dr. Craig, but a multitude of atheists, agnostics, skeptics, and people of other faiths, people of no faith, think the same thing. And so we've got an important ministry here, and we appreciate it. Thank you for spending some time with us, and come back and see us.
Thank you much, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Let's get to some questions then, Dr. Craig, and we get a lot of them at reasonablefaith.org. Dear Dr. Craig, I'm a Christian, and I'm trying to hold together faith in God. He's all I've ever known to be so true. Anyway, the question was, is it even possible for nothing to exist? Because if we got rid of this universe, wouldn't there just be some sort of void? I would really like your help on this. I plan on doing philosophy as I go to college in January, so I'm just trying to hold my faith together and learn and grow in Christ. Well, there are a couple of things going on here, but not only his question about nothingness and is it even possible for nothing to exist, but he also seems to be struggling a little bit.
I notice that, and I wonder why. He doesn't seem to let on as to what it is that is causing him difficulty. The language of holding on rather than flourishing is
disturbing. He said it twice. And I just know in my past, in my walk with the Lord, that sometimes I felt like I was on hold in my 20s and 30s and so on until I get a certain question answered. You know what? I don't feel like I can keep going with the vigor in my relationship with the Lord until I get this issue settled. God has always been very gracious to me, Bill. I have gotten the answers. Not that I know it all, but to my satisfaction, my disturbing questions, God has graciously given me resources and insight to the point that I could move on. But this does seem like, from this college student, something that kind of has him on hold a little bit. So.
Right, and that's unfortunate, because I don't think everyone is as fortunate as you are, Kevin. I think many times Christians will not be able to receive the answers to their questions because perhaps they're geographically isolated.
Exactly.
Think of someone in Siberia or in the Sudan, where they just don't have the resources to get answers. And therefore, I think that the key to successful Christian living is not having all your questions answered. It's learning how to live victoriously with unanswered questions. And so it's important not to let these sort of unanswered questions put our faith on hold. We need to realize that as finite persons, we're not going to have all of the answers, but we have good grounds for believing what we believe, and we move on in the hopes that as we further read and explore, we will find more answers.
So what is this problem he has with, is it even possible for nothing to exist?
Well, I think what's odd about this question, Kevin, is that the theist, at least if he's of a Leibnizian sort, agrees with the questioner that it's impossible that nothing exists. That is exactly Leibniz's point. There must be a logically necessary being or a metaphysically necessary being, which is the reason why anything at all exists. So the heart of the Leibnizian version of the cosmological argument is that there is a metaphysically necessary being, which is the sufficient reason for the existence of everything else. So I actually agree with him that it's impossible for nothing to exist. There is no possible world in which nothing exists. God exists in every possible world and is a metaphysically necessary being.
Prior to the Big Bang, notice I said prior,
yes,
because it's kind of difficult to say before the Big Bang, was there some sort of just void? I mean, there was no space, no time.
And that may be the source of his difficulty. When one says prior to, one has to mean explanatorily prior, not chronologically prior. When we say there was nothing before the Big Bang, what we mean is there was not anything before the Big Bang. We don't mean that there was something before the Big Bang and it was nothing. That would be a source of confusion. Rather, what one negates is the whole sentence. You negate the sentence, there was something before the Big Bang. It is false that there was something before the Big Bang. So it may be that he's simply being misled by the use of the word nothing as a substantive, as a noun, as a common noun, thinking that nothing must refer to something, some sort of a void. And that's not, in fact, the case, any more than, say, the pronoun nobody refers to somebody. It means it's not anybody. And similarly, it's not anything prior to the Big Bang. So in saying that the universe began to exist and was preceded by nothing, one means the universe began to exist and there was not anything prior to its beginning.
It's difficult sometimes to really crank that down as to what we mean by nothing. We could say there's nothing in the room. That means there's a room with no furniture and no fixtures or anything like that. And it can also mean just an absolute absence of anything. So when we say nothing, sometimes we have to really get our definition straight, don't we?
Right. We have to be very careful, or we can very easily be tricked by words. Our language can often mislead us. There's this wonderful incident in the Odyssey, I think, of Homer, where you remember Ulysses confronts the Cyclops, and the Cyclops says, "What is your name?" And he says, "My name is Nobody." And thereafter, he blinds the Cyclops, and the other Cyclopses ask him, "Who's attacked you? Who's injured you?" And he says, "Nobody has injured me. Nobody has put my eye out." And they say, "Well, then why are you so disturbed if nobody's done anything to you?" Well, you can see there, Homer is making fun of the way in which this word nobody can be taken to mean somebody who is named Nobody. And similarly, this reader, I think, is thinking of nothing as being something which is nothing. And that's not the way the word is to be used. It's a negative term.
I think another example quite often is we say there was nothing prior to the Big Bang, but God was there. And isn't God something? And what we would, I guess, try to fine-tune that to is that there was nothing material or spatial or of time prior to that.
Well, again, you've got to be very careful that you understand the word prior to mean explanatorily prior or causally prior, not chronologically or temporally prior. So I would say that God is not chronologically prior to the Big Bang. He's not temporally prior to the Big Bang. He's explanatorily or causally prior to the Big Bang. And material reality comes into being at the Big Bang, so it's obviously not causally or explanatorily prior to itself. It is contingent, brought into existence by God, so that God has a sort of causal and explanatory priority to the universe, but not a temporal priority.
Here's another question, Dr. Craig. He says, "Dr. Craig, I was not born a Westerner, so in my journey toward faith in Jesus Christ, the intellectual obstacles were mainly of a culturally chauvinistic or racialistic nature. And yet, by the grace of God, I've resolved these questions to my own satisfaction." And Bill, in a nutshell, he's saying that how do you answer the charge that Christianity is just a white man's or has become a white man's religion?
I would say that anyone who is aware of the demographics of Christianity today and its growth will see that that impression is just completely mistaken. In fact, Christianity is not a white man's religion. In 1989, the number of Christians in Asia exceeded the number of Christians in North America. And by 1991, the number of Christians in Asia exceeded the number of Christians in the entire Western world. So if anything, Christianity is today an Oriental religion. It is primarily Asian. It's Chinese, Korean, Indonesian, and Indian. And it turns out that the Caucasian branch of Christendom will be merely the initial segment that God used in Western Europe to spawn the worldwide missionary movement that carried the gospel throughout the world, and that in the end, it will be just a tiny fragment of Christendom that is Caucasian. The overwhelming majority of Christians today are Black and Oriental.
Bill, do you have any insight as to whether Christianity really is declining in the Western world?
My understanding of the demographics is that in the West, the growth rates of Christianity, or at least evangelical Christianity, are basically flat. We're not losing. We're holding our own. There is a slight increase in the United States praise the Lord. But in the Western world in general, because of the precipitous declines in Western Europe, Christianity is basically flatlining it in the Western world. It is in the third world, in Latin America, Africa, and Asia, that Christianity is growing at well over twice the growth of in the world's population. It is far outstripping the increase in the world's population in these non-Western countries, and so is becoming increasingly non-Western and non-Caucasian in its nature.
Brings up a question about American evangelicalism and America's attitudes toward religion in general. Seems like there is kind of what I call an adolescent rebellion that took place in the 70s and 80s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And that is, you know, we can't have that stodgy old religion from our parents and grandparents. We need to look for insight into other options. And an embrace of the East and Eastern mysticism began. And it's almost,
it certainly did begin, didn't it?
Yeah.
In the 60s.
And pop culture just, and it led to the New Age movement, yeah. Which is kind of an embrace of Eastern mysticism and so on. Pop culture kind of played up on that as being the rebellious black sheep of the family by saying, if you really want to get insight, then you need to go to the Oriental man down the street, the Karate Kid and so forth, because they hold to the path of life. And your old grandpa down, the deacon at the church, he doesn't know much, you know. So perhaps that has also led to a notion that Christianity is a stodgy old white man's religion, when nothing could be further from the truth, and it certainly didn't start that way.
No, and well, that's a good point. It didn't start that way. I mean, we need to understand that Christianity is birthed out of Judaism, and it is a Middle Eastern religion, which spread throughout the world, really, into China and into North Africa, as well as into Europe. But it was in Europe that, of course, Western civilization flourished, and then had the financial resources for carrying the gospel to the rest of the world. And today, if you visit China, for example, as I have with the Society of Christian Philosophers, it is remarkable what Chinese academics themselves are saying. As part of the outreach of the Society of Christian Philosophers, we've been meeting jointly with professors of philosophy at top universities in China and talking about philosophical issues. And what has stunned us is to hear the Chinese academics themselves saying to us that China needs a new philosophical foundation for its morality and for its culture if it's to go forward into the 21st century. At the last conference I was at Fudan University in Shanghai, one of the Chinese philosophers says Confucianism is basically dead. It cannot be revived. He said there is no other religion other than Christianity which has a chance of serving as a foundation for the moral fabric of Chinese society. And he said what we need to recognize today is that Christianity is not a foreign religion. He said Christianity in China is a flourishing, indigenous, Chinese religion, and we need to embrace it as such. Well, we were just blown away by this sort of admission on the part of this Chinese academic and this embrace of Christianity as an indigenous Chinese faith.
Wow. Bottom line is, Christ came for everyone.
Yes, and before the throne, it says in the book of Revelation, there will be people from every tongue and tribe and nation and people giving praise to the Lamb and to God.
Thank you so much for listening to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig, and we'll pick it up there next time and answer some more questions that we receive at reasonablefaith.org. One more time, if you would like to start a Reasonable Faith chapter in your area, information is at reasonablefaith.org. And by the way, if you appreciate the information that you get at reasonablefaith.org and you would like to see these podcasts continue and see us branch out even further, then be a partner with us. You can find out how when you go to reasonablefaith.org. Your financial and prayer support means a great deal to us. That's reasonablefaith.org, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.